In a world in which movies struggle to find plot, Alan Adams of The Main Edge breaks it down for you in Pass the Popcorn. Now on Downtown with Rich Kimball.
Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby.
That's right. Let's all go to Time to the talk lobby. Movies, 5:15, Downtown Monday. Alan Adams from The Main Edge with us in studio. How was the Adams weekend, sir?
It was pretty good, actually. It was pretty good. We
stay local?
We spent Saturday afternoon. We went out to camp.
Nice.
Well, the grass was getting a little high, and so I figured I'd take the weed whacker out there. And
does Stella like camp?
She likes camp okay, but she does not care for the water.
Oh yeah, Ginger is the same way. The other thing that freaks Ginger out is the sounds of nature. being a city dog.
No, Stella's okay with like being out there. Like she's but yeah, we've made a couple of efforts to get her to, you know, even just tolerate being in the water. And it's just like, you know, I'll pick her up and I'll take her out to, you know, so she's about chest deep, like she can always touch the ground, like and it's like I'll take her out, I'll set her down, and it's just like, nope.
Yeah, why have you done this to me?
Back to the shore, and yeah, then she'll shake off, and then she'll just look at me with that disapproving look, just being like, "Come on, man, we both know how this is going to play out. So why don't we just you know, quit it?"
You know, in her head, she's fantasizing about picking you up and dropping you in to see how you like it.
Right? You know, and I don't know, man. But yeah, no, it's lovely out there. It was a great weekend for it.
Oh yeah.
You know, we managed to get out of there before the thunderstorms rolled through.
Yeah.
So it was nice. So like we had a very lovely time there. We had just started to hear distant rumblings when we left, but it was still like sunny and like clear. Mm. Like I mean, it was just it's one of those things where yeah, that storm it moved fast, but it was a big one. So it was it was nice to sort of.
Didn't get much of it here.
Yeah, like it was much more of a coastal thing, but like, you know, there were some places in Washington County that were getting hail.
Right.
Like it was just like it was nuts. But we had a lovely time, and then you know, yesterday, you know, the usual Sunday stuff. Spent some time at the farmer's market like you do.
Oh sure.
It's been a nice little weekend.
Nice, nice. Well, it's good to have you back here with us. You saw lots of movies since last we chatted with you. Three of them. Where should we begin?
You know, it's we'll just get this one out of the way. So I saw this movie Beckett on Netflix, and I know there are differing opinions on this. I'm of the opinion that John David Washington is going to be a legitimate leading man, like a straight up movie star, like maybe, I mean, not to the level of his dad, but I mean, who is, but I think he's going to be a major Hollywood player, you know, in the future. You know, I know some people don't necessarily agree with that take, but regardless, if he keeps making movies like Beckett, they will be right and I will be wrong.
Because,
it's tough, man. It's a tough beat. You know, he's one of those. He's very much got a presence on screen, but he just doesn't have the chops yet to carry a movie that, frankly, is. I mean, it's poorly written. It's the director. The direction is. I mean, pedestrian at best. Hmm. Like just sort of your sort of standard issue man on the run thriller. You know. And when your action movie is lacking in action and your thriller is lacking in thrills, that is not a successful film.
that's troubling.
The basic gist, John David Washington plays the titular Beckett. He's an American tourist in Greece. He and his girlfriend April, played by the wonderful Alicia Vikander. They're staying at a hotel in a more urban setting. You know, there's political unrest in the area. There's a left wing consortium has sort of started elevating a candidate in an effort to sort of change the direction of the country politically. So they're like, well, let's get out of town. They make their way into the hills, and due to circumstances, there's an accident. They have a car accident. They crash into a house, an abandoned house. And in the course of that accident, April, Beckett's girlfriend, passes away. No spoil. I mean, it happens right in the, so it's, as he's sort of dazed and coming back into consciousness, he sees a young child, and then said young child is immediately whisked away by a woman. He doesn't, you know, that's obviously the furthest thing from his mind. His girlfriend has, he's just lost his girlfriend. He's badly hurt. But when he's questioned by the police, they tell him, well, you're very lucky that the house was abandoned. And he's like, well, actually, there were people there. And the police are like, oh, that's very interesting. Beckett is very sad, very overcome with grief. And so he makes his way back to the scene of the accident, where his intent is to take his own life. But before he can do that, a random woman shows up and starts shooting at him. So he runs and hides. And then the aforementioned police officer who was questioning him shows up and is like, hey, this has all been a big mistake. You should come out. We should work this out. Rich, as you can imagine, it was not a mistake. So when Beckett comes out with his hands up, they start shooting at him.
Oh, man.
And then it's off across the Greek countryside, fleeing in hopes of, escaping the wrath of whatever mysterious pursuers are pursuing him.
But I thought he wanted to die.
Well, you know, it's very complicated.
Okay, okay.
And so we get to basically watch him traipse across the countryside, trying to make his way back to the U.S. Embassy and to sort of achieve a modicum of safety. But that turns out to be a much more complicated journey than our man Beckett is anticipating. Mm. Look, it's one of those movies where you want it to be better, and you can kind of see where it could be better, but it's like the script is both sort of threadbare and overstuffed. Like, it's convoluted in a way that's not particularly interesting. The director, look, they're on location in Greece, which by all accounts is a beautiful country. I wouldn't know, because literally every shot in this movie feels like it could have been shot anywhere. And it's like, come on, like, what's the point of doing this if you're not going to take advantage of the landscape? Instead, we just get a bunch of medium shots of John David Washington awkwardly stumbling through fields and down streets and stuff. And that's another thing. One of the strengths, the biggest strengths of John David Washington as a screen presence is his physicality. Like, he has a very, very, very specific, very strong physical presence. And the director basically just sort of takes that out of the equation and just makes him into, so we just get a lot of him bumbling around and and stumbling, and just, it just doesn't feel, it feels very stiff and very, he's clearly not comfortable with what he's doing.
Right.
Ultimately, I think he's a very talented performer, but this movie did not do him or anyone involved any favors.
All right. Well, that's the story on Beckett. What's next?
Let's talk about Respect, the Aretha Franklin biopic.
Yeah.
It's an interesting phenomenon. It's one of those things where this movie is formulaic to the point of bordering on parody. It's so paint by numbers. Like, literally everything you've ever seen in a music biopic, from, the difficult upbringing to the substance abuse to the abusive relationships, all that stuff is here, and it's represented in precisely the way that you've always seen it represented on screen. It's a movie that should have been straight to cable or except Jennifer Hudson is incredible this movie. It's been a long time since I saw a movie whose floor was raised so significantly by a singular performance. She is the absolute perfect person to play this part. And she does it in a way, and, you know, like, I know the temptation is in these sorts of movies to do an impression, to do, right, like, you know, to go, you know, I know he won an Oscar, but to go full Rami Malek, right, you know what I mean? Like, you're just basically, you know, you're basically a, you know, in a tribute band at that point. This isn't that. It's an interpretation, like, because, again, like, you know, Jennifer Hudson, who is an incredibly talented singer and a very, very good actress, knows perfectly well that there's only one Aretha Franklin. Yeah. And that understanding only serves to make her performance better, because she is a great singer. And so she really breathes this wonderful life into all these songs. And that's another thing. There's a lot of music.
Now, how much of her life is covered in this?
Okay, so it's not a full-on Cradle to Grave kind of biopic, but it's not like, it's not one of those snapshot ones either. Mm. So basically, we start in Detroit, where she lived, young Aretha, about 10 years old, we go through, and our end point is the filming of the Amazing Grace live recording, which is, I think, 1972. So it's about 15, 20 years, okay, about 20 years, probably a little more than that. You know, so we spent some time with young Aretha, in Detroit with her preacher father, C.L. Franklin, played by Forrest Whitaker.
Isn't that great?
Yeah. Yes. Right. And then, you know, we spent some time there, kind of get some baseline understanding of her life. The sort of complicated relationship she had with her dad and with her sisters and with her mom, who's only very briefly in the film, but played by the wonderful Audra McDonald. So we spend the first 15 minutes of the film in that place before we get a grown up Aretha, and that's where Jennifer Hudson steps into the part as she's sort of getting ready to make the move to New York City. To start recording, signs with Columbia. Her dad is managing her, but she also, that's when she sort of starts running with a gentleman by the name of Ted White, played by Marlon Wayans, who is a hustler. We'll call him a hustler, a music manager who has some very specific ideas of his own with regard to Aretha's career that causes significant conflict between her and her family. We start seeing more and more of the substance abuse issues, specifically alcohol. Her early struggles with Columbia, the switch of labels. That's when she hooks on with the producer, Jerry Wetzler, played by a wonderful Marc Maron. He's really good in this.
Good.
And so the stuff where they go to record in Alabama at Muscle Shoals and all this stuff, and when she really starts to blow up and become this sort of iconic superstar. But even as she's succeeding professionally, her personal life is, there are a lot of struggles in her personal life, both in her relationship with her family, both her parents, her kids, her sisters, like all these people, you know, and all of it sort of wrapped up in this combination of, you know, an understanding, you know, a desire to be the greatest, and the sort of inferiority that comes with the struggles that she had when she was younger. And we kind of go from there. As I said, you know, very straightforward, very paint by numbers. The reality is, like, I spent a little time, I was kind of bored during some of it. But I can't stress enough how good Jennifer Hudson is in this movie. Like, she's just, you know, just magnetic. And it's one of those things where, you know, and the movie runs, it's almost 2.5 hours long. It probably needs to be, you know, two tops. Like, it's just overly long. And I understand the desire to put as much of that story in as you can, but you don't need all of it. Like, I mean, there are, you know, you don't need three different incidents when one will do, like, right, that sort of deal. The performances are the highlight. Like, Jennifer Hudson is great. You know, Forrest Whitaker is here. He's good. Audra McDonald, she doesn't get a lot to do, but she's great. Mary J. Blige shows up in what's essentially an extended cameo, as Dinah Washington, and is just phenomenal. Mm. Like, just like two scenes where she comes in throwing 100 and just like, and then is just like, I'm out. Which you love to see that sort of thing. Wayans is okay. Like, I think he's he felt a little bit out of his depth in places. Marin, as I said, he was great. But again, you just wish that the story had been told in a way that was a little more interesting.
Right.
Like, because again, it's just too bad that such a great performance has been it's surrounded by a movie that's just, I mean, that's just okay.
All right, let's finally talk about the movie that was number one at the box office. For a time, I didn't think I was a Ryan Reynolds guy, but I might be coming around on him, and the trailer for this looks very good.
Look, man, I have a complicated relationship with Ryan Reynolds. Like, my feelings about him have, I spent a very long time being active, like having active antipathy regarding Reynolds. I've slowly been almost forced to come around due to the nature of some of the projects that he's undertaken. Like, when I first heard about this movie, I'm like, oh, Jesus, here we go. I was really like, okay, this is really gonna be something. Ryan Reynolds is just gonna Ryan Reynolds all over the place, and it's just gonna be, infuriating. So I go in, but then, like, I saw, like you said, I saw the trailer, and like, okay, maybe this is gonna be okay. And then the early returns started coming in, and everyone's like, everyone is basically saying this movie is way better than you think it is. And after having seen it, like, yeah, I mean, the movie is way better than I thought it was gonna be. It's smarter than I thought it was gonna be. It's more well made than I thought it was gonna be. The performances are better than I thought they were gonna be. Like, it's just every piece is better than I anticipated. And when you add all that up, what you get is a pretty good movie. Like, I mean, it was a really good time. It kind of chaps me a little bit to talk about it like that. But it is. It's really good. The basic conceit, for those who don't know, Reynolds plays Guy. He's a bank teller in Free City. He's got a very straightforward life. He gets up in the morning, says hi to his fish, eats his breakfast, gets dressed, walks to work. He gets some coffee along the way, meets up with his buddy, Buddy, played by Lil Rel Howery, who's a security guard at the bank. And they work, they go home, they wake up, they do it all again. Except every day at this bank, on multiple occasions, there are robberies.
Every day.
Massively violent robberies. Multiple occasions every day. And that's, we learn that Free City has its regular citizens. And then there are what are known as the sunglasses people. And the sunglasses people are heavily armed lunatics in crazy costumes who are basically just wreaking havoc all the time. Well, as it turns out, Free City is actually the name of an open world video game. The sunglasses people are the players within that video game, whereas Guy and all of his friends are NPCs, non-player characters. What happens is we have one of the players, a woman named Millie, played by Jodie Comer, who's so good on Killing Eve, who is seeking proof that the work that she and her partner, a guy named Keys, played by Joe Keery, the work that they did on an indie game has been folded into the framework of Free City, and she needs proof so she can take down the weirdo tech bro owner of the company that makes the game, played by clearly having the time of his life, Taika Waititi. So she's trying to do this, but along the way, Guy starts to deviate from his programming, and that deviation leads to him coming into possession of a pair of these sunglasses. He puts them on, and now he sees the heads-up display that all the players see, and his entire world shifts. All the while, he's also falling in love with the avatar of this woman, Millie. So there's a little bit of a romance happening through all this. And Millie is basically enlisting people both inside and outside the game to sort of help her get this proof that she needs. And as it turns out, Guy well, guy might be sentient. Like, he might well be the first actual artificial intelligence to ever achieve self-awareness. So that's pretty high concept for a Ryan Reynolds movie.
Yes, yeah.
And man, it's so funny and it's so smart and it's so. Here was one of the things that it's been a while since a movie made me actively feel old. But one of the aspects of this movie is there are moments where commentary is being made on the events that are happening within the game. And the people making these commentaries are, YouTubers and gamers and Twitch streamers and all that. People who are very famous, who I have never seen before in my life.
Oh, influencers.
It's like there was like with names like Ninja and Pokimane and, Laser Cats and just like all these. And it's like, I'm like, are these like. It's like the Ninja was a name that I was familiar with. Everyone else, I'm just like, is this real? but the people, the engagement of the people in the theater with me made clear, oh, okay, I'm just an old man who doesn't understand the kids today.
Because you don't have 3 million followers on TikTok.
Right. So I had these are legitimately famous people in that particular sphere. And so of course they're included in this movie, and of course they're folded into it. And there are a number of wonderful cameos from famous people that I did recognize. Both some are very, very much not voice. There's one in particular that just absolutely slayed in the theater. I'm not going to spoil it because it's really funny, and it's much better if it's a surprise. It's just this wonderful level of engagement with the, on multiple levels as far as awareness with regard to the video game world. It's got this wonderful sort of satiric edge. And Ryan Reynolds, he manages here to mostly subvert that sort of inner smugness. He plays it almost entirely genuine in a way that I'm not sure I thought he was capable of, but he really, like, there's a sincerity to this performance where it's like, oh my God, I actually turned to Sheridan at one point. I'm like, is Ryan Reynolds, like, is he sweet in this movie? Like, again, I don't feel comfortable saying that, but I mean, it really was like, it's great work from him. The supporting performances are delightful, like a lot of great work. Visually, it's very stunning. They do a wonderful job of sort of creating this kind of augmented reality, as well as it's a wonderful touch where they toggle back and forth between like how people see each other within the game as opposed to how they look on the screen. And it's close, but it's different. And it's just like just little touches like that where it's just like, okay, so everyone involved in this really has a good sense of how this world operates. It's again, like I had pretty low expectations, it deserves the accolades it's getting. Like it's a really solid movie, and it's a movie that were things different, probably would have made $100 million over the course of the weekend. But it did well enough. Apparently, Ryan Reynolds already has taken to the internet to let everyone know that Disney was like, you know what? I think we're going to need another one of these.
There you go.
Yep.
The way of the world.
That's how she goes.
Thank you, Alan, as always.
My pleasure.
We'll see you Wednesday.
Yes, sir.
Alan Adams, Main Edge, talking movies here on Downtown.